We're going to cover the recent drama that's ensued on Twitter over the past week or so over controversial comments from Warren McGrew, the Idol Killer. And, you know, what I want to get across in this episode is just to sort of document what's unfolded and why, you know, most of us on the Calvinist side, we're not falling for the attempted salvage of one of the worst arguments slash analogies slash accusations that I've ever come across or that we've ever come across, okay? So when we look at this this meme from Bavir's perspective, it sort of highlights their attitude coming from the other side. And that is, well, I'll read the meme. I'm mad. Well, here's what I meant. I don't believe you. I just want to be mad. That's what they think's going on here. They think, well, we clarified things multiple times, and you're just not accepting it because you want to be mad. The answer to that is no. Have you asked yourself that possibly that your clarifications are bad, like really bad, number one? And number two, that you are attempting to salvage something that never should have been salvaged in the first place, but should have just been tossed into the garbage can and moved on from, right? So it's not just that we want to be mad. It's that you guys have, as I'm going to document here, you've shifted the goalpost away from something that started very clearly, very clearly. And you've moved it over to, oh, we've just been about the issues all along, which is a joke, as I'm going to demonstrate. Or I should sort of catch myself there. Warren was not about the issues all along. You might be coming along afterwards, trying to salvage his mess and prop him up. And yeah, lots of little rabbit holes and debates have sparked since then. So it's easy to sit there down in the rabbit holes and say, oh, look, we've always been here in these rabbit holes about the issues. But that's not true. Okay. This issue has been around since the beginning of time. You could have talked about it at any point. Warren was not some super brave person that came along and opened this issue up. He said some ridiculous things, and it warranted the exact response that it got. So in this episode, I'm just going to summarize really quickly. I'm going to lay the foundation actually by showing one of the things that I've seen, that I saw from Warren 2 years ago, a video he put out where it was like this weird music video, and he clipped things so badly that he made Dr. White seem like he said something he didn't. So I'm going to lay the foundation with a really, really bad misrepresentation just to show you the type of way that Warren McGrew operates. Then we're going to play the clip to show the clear intention from the start. Then we're going to play portions of Warren's response to the drama and show that there's no apologies. He pretends like he was about the issues all along. And he even tries to, quote unquote, clarify the child sacrifice example in an astounding way. He actually, instead of, again, just saying, well, that was really bad, I shouldn't have used that example, he tries to hold on to it and just... And use it in a different way, and we're just going to see how it just doesn't work, right? That example should never have been used from the start. And then we're going to go and cover some of the episode from Provision's perspective where Warren went on and talked with them. I'm going to give some props to Eric from Provision's perspective for pinpointing the real issue at one small point in time and offering basically providing an opportunity for Warren to say, yeah, I shouldn't have said that, but, you know, he doesn't. He shows no signs of wishing he had done things differently, but instead, as he's gone on to be on multiple different shows, really just said, and I doubled down and said, well, if I could have done it again, I would have been even harsher, right? And then lastly, we're going to go through some Twitter stuff, a couple memes, a couple discussions I had, just to actually cover some legitimate issues pertaining to this, and hopefully that'll be helpful as well. The only other thing I wanted to cover is, look, I'm not gonna lie here and pretend like I believe that Warren is part of the church, part of the Christian church that he's saved. He's not going to be offended by that. He doesn't think I'm saved, and I'm not offended by that. This is just the way it is. And, you know, this is just one example of a tweet here. He says, the issue is not do infants die as a consequence of sins of others, but does God send them to hell for the sins of others? We could debate that later, but look at what his last comment is. The God depicted in quote-unquote infant damnation is Malek, not Christ. Okay? So he's been very clear that if you hold the position that perhaps there are non-elect infants who might end up in hell, then you don't even serve the same God as him. So if he's going to dish that from his side, I have no problem dishing it back to his side. Okay, so, you know, and that's not even to mention his view of open theism, which I find highly problematic. I'm going to go on record as saying I don't believe that open theists are Christians either. I'm sorry, but I think, again, I'm not saying this in an offensive way. I'm saying this in an objective, logical way. We don't have the same God in mind, okay? So you can take that or leave that. I don't mean that in a horrible, terrible way. I mean that in a convicted way where that's just the way I have to feel about it, okay? So with that sort of laid out, let's go ahead and get started. Now, the first thing I want to play for you guys is actually something that Warren made about 2 years ago. So a long time ago, he made this little sort of like music video. It's very strange if you listen to it, but where he just mishmashed together a bunch of Calvinists, famous Calvinists saying, we believe God decrees this, that, and the other thing. But if you go through and listen to it, he does it in such a way that it is clearly taking people completely out of context, just completely chopped up. And I'm not familiar with some of the other speakers. I don't listen to them regularly, but having listened to Dr. White for years and years and years, when I heard one of the sections that he plays from Dr. White, I knew instantly. I mean, I've listened to every Dividing Line that ever occurred multiple times over. I've listened to every Radio Free Geneva 10 or 20 times over. And I knew instantly when I heard it. I was in shock. I sort of just sat there and went, wait, he didn't actually do that, did he? He didn't actually do that. So what do we know to be horrible misrepresentation when it comes to like sound bites and stuff like that, right? It's when you chop somebody, you take something that they say and you chop the front of it off and the end of it off completely out of context to get it to seem like here they're saying something. But because it's out of context, it conveys a completely different message, right? We all recognize that to be extremely dishonest, right? That's bad enough. But can you imagine what's worse than that? And by the way, that occurs multiple times in this little episode that Warren made several years ago. But what could be worse than that type of misrepresentation? How about taking somebody who, and I'm telling you this before you hear it, so that you go, you have the same. You're in the same position I was when you heard it. You know what was actually occurring. What's worse than that is to take somebody who is reading a letter written to them from an opposition, reading what they say, what they're saying against your position, and then take that, clip it, and paint it and project it as though the person reading the letter of opposition is actually saying the thing. This is for real. I don't know how you could possibly be more dishonest in representation than that. It's bad enough to just take it out of context. But to clip somebody reading somebody else's objection to you and try to project that and paint that as you saying what they're saying is mind-blowing. So listen to this real quick, and I apologize, it's just the way the video is. He has this music going on that's louder than what the people are saying, so it's hard to hear. Got to give credit to Warren, he's gotten a lot better at his little video effects since then. But listen through some of this.
Lightning strikes. All these rapes would take place. We do affirm all these rapes. God forces you.
Now, do you hear that clip? We do affirm all these rapes. Cut. Right? As if God, like, clearly Dr. White was probably in the middle of saying that we affirm that all these rapes were determined by God, and then went on to explain that God has a good purpose in all things, even the horrible things, blah, 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 right? That's the basic misrepresentation. That's bad enough. I'm going to back it up a few seconds because listen to the next part.
Apes. God forces you to sin, and then punishes you for doing what he forced you to do.
When a child.
And it goes on. So, God forces you to sin and then punishes you for what he forced you to do. Now, that is not Dr. White's position. It's not any Calvinist position that God determining that you do something means he's forcing you to do it and then punishing you for what you're forced to do. I haven't even heard that out of Leighton Flowers' mouth. But Dr. White was reading a letter of objection. That was an objection against Calvinists read by Dr. White. And he plays it here as if Dr. White is the one saying it.
Do affirm all these rapes. God forces you to sin, and then punishes you for doing what he forced you to do.
When a child.
Yes.
So there you have it, right? So this is the type of person that we're dealing with idol killer Warren McGrew. So after having heard that, I mean, if you hadn't heard that, most of you haven't. I don't even know if Dr. White is aware of that little video from 2 years ago. Oh, which reminds me, since I had played that clip, I also wanted to point out the Twitter exchange that I had with Warren 2 years ago when he first posted this. So I said, I'll say it again, this is the most dishonest representation of someone I've ever seen. You played a portion of Dr. White reading a letter from a non-Calvinist and played it here like it was what he was saying. God forces you and punishes you, etc. You should be ashamed. And he literally tried to pull this off. And I said, I'll say it again. I think I had actually called him out prior to this. He said, do you read the Bible like you don't read video descriptions? So here's his justification. Because he says in the video description, seriously, he says, let me see here. Two statements are made wherein objections are raised by non-Calvinists, but you don't hear the non-Calvinists making them, right? Or you heard one George Bryson, which most of us have heard like years and years ago, but the statement where James White is reading the letter, if you don't know he's reading a letter, right, he says, these are objections White cannot overcome via his reformed apologetics. So because you think it's an objection that can't be overcome, that in Warren's mind justifies him clipping the living crap out of what White said to paint him as saying something he didn't say. Right. So no sign of recognition or regret here. I said, how does that excuse anything? And he said, oh, he repeatedly contradicted himself. And in fact, when you're clipping everything like crazy, it's very easy to make people seem like they're contradicting themselves. Right. But never mind that. Even if you think a position is contradictory, it doesn't give you the right to intentionally misrepresent somebody. This is a response. Semantics. If you recall, you've claimed God decrees all evil. As I said, clutch your pearls elsewhere. This is his attitude overall, over pure, the purest form of misrepresentation I can imagine, right? He doesn't care. He's totally okay with it. He is aware of it. And he thinks it's excused because in the video description, he mentioned not even mentioning the timestamps or quoting which statements were against Calvinism that James White wasn't actually saying. I mean, this is just such a mess. So I could go on and on about this, but I show this to set the tone for us going into this recent controversy over what Warren said recently, right? Because if you hadn't, now that you've heard that, it's like, oh yeah, well, that's just the type of person he is, right? Now it's not as surprising, as shocking as what he said. It's still outrageous and warrants the outrage that we've seen. But once you understand how Warren operates and the way he thinks, it's not surprising that he is the one sort of saying these things. So we're going to move over and play the clip. Everybody's heard it by now, but we're going to play it again because I want to point out how the other side has managed to move the goalpost completely away from the insinuation and the accusation behind what Warren said. Okay, so let's play it real quick.
It made mention, Leighton, of like, well, you know, if I'm elect and my children aren't, you know, that's okay. And I just wanted to highlight how that's the same kind of spirit.
Okay, so this is his theme in the original clip. And that is that if my child's not elect, that's okay. Not because it's a hard truth that I need to accept, as he's going to try to say later on, and you know, but that's okay because at least I get into heaven, right? And he's going to liken that to throwing your child on a fire to burn as a burnt offering. That's okay because at least I get my crops. So let's hear this.
It made mention, Leighton, of like, well, you know, if I'm elect and my children aren't, you know, that's okay. And I just wanted to highlight how that's the same kind of spirit and mindset that the ancient worshipers of pagan deities would engage in when they would sacrifice their children to Baal. Because as long as I get my good crops, I'm willing to throw my child on the pyre. As long as I am being blessed financially, I'm willing to throw my child on the pyre. It's the same mindset where they're like, well, God may have eternally reprobated my child, but as long as I get into heaven, I'm cool with that.
I don't know about you guys, but I mean,
and then unfortunately, you know, Leighton Flowers goes on to perfect opportunity to say, whoa, dude, I mean, you're bringing that onto the person. You're attacking the character of, you know, reformed parents and their views and of how they view their children. You don't need to go there. Like, let's keep it on the issues. But instead he sort of like doubles down and runs with it and makes absolutely no correction, which is sad enough. So that's the clip that has caused all the drama and outrage from our side. And rightfully so, as we're going to see the whole point of my episode here, and we're going to talk about some of these issues towards the end. So it's not just completely me railing against, you know, Warren and what he said and the sort of way he operates. But what I want to do is make it very clear, because they have, unfortunately, I don't think it's been successful, but they've distracted and moved the goalpost away from what's actually going on here. Okay. We erupted in outrage over his comments and the insinuation and the accusation and the projection of a particular mindset of reformed parents and the way they view their children. And he presents it, as you just heard, very selfishly, as if, I mean, he literally says, well, if my child's not elect, that's okay. Not because it's a hard truth to accept, but that's okay because at least I get into heaven. It's all about me. Just like the people who burn their children, you know, as long as I get my crops and my financial, you know, and my wealth and my prosperity, well, I'll just sacrifice my children, right? That's the issue. That's the outrage. And as you're going to see, I'm going to go through various portions of two episodes. Number one, Warren does a response to the outrage. And number two, he goes on Provision's perspective. And they do an episode with him. And this is one of the sad things is he's being paraded around like from their side as of some sort of like hero, right? He like he's brave enough to have actually said that Calvinists believe that there might be non-elect children who end up in eternal damnation. That's been a position since the beginning of time, right? Very few people are dogmatic because the Bible's not very clear on it, but that's been a position since the beginning of time. And he's not the first to point it out. He's not being brave by pointing it out. But he's being paraded around like a hero, and they're doing it by mostly, I'm going to have to give credit to one of the provisionist perspective guys, but mostly by moving the goalpost away from what the outrage is actually about and just talking about the issue of babies possibly ending up in hell. And so that's the purpose of this episode. I'm going to get into some of these issues towards the end. This is not all just about, you know, showing Warren and his misrepresentations and the way he operates. But having set that foundation of what's going on here, I'm going to go through these other clips as well. So what I want to play first straight out is, and you can go watch this video. It's called A Calvinist View of Infants. It's his response to the drama. And you're going to see, as I play through this, that not once does he recognize what we were actually outraged about. It's funny because I'm not going to play it, but he does a little mockery of the Radio Free Geneva intro, and he clips White, you know, saying this is absurd and you're not honest and all this stuff. So let's hear what Warren thinks. So, you know, Dr. White calls him dishonest. Another, the Gospel Truth dude put out a video where he was even more outraged and was calling Warren a liar. Let's see what Warren thinks that we were accusing him of lying about. For real. Check this out.
That's where we disagree. But James didn't address the point of contention or offer any biblical defense of infant damnation. He just waved this around and he clutched his pearls and he feigned indignation and called me a liar. Now he knows I'm not lying about some Calvinists affirming infant damnation because he's one of them. And he's also
And we'll get to that in a minute, but see how he already thinks that we're calling him a liar because he simply pointed out a position that's existed since the beginning of time, right? This is delusional stuff here.
Likely aware of all the other Calvinists who've also affirmed this. So what he's calling a lie is actually my criticism of the doctrine. He doesn't like to be challenged.
So there you have it. He and I don't, you know, Warren's not stupid. He knows that's not what Dr. White was calling a lie because I'm about to play the clip straight through where he clearly points out what he was calling a lie, which is the statement that I have pointed out since the beginning of this episode on what actually caused the drama. But to Warren, just simply pointing out the position is what everybody's calling him a liar about, which is a total joke. Nobody is. That's not why they're calling you a liar, saying that you're misrepresenting us at all. And sadly, you know, we're going to move into some other episodes where, you know, he travels around, he goes on the Soteriology 101, he goes on the Provisionist Perspective, he's being paraded around like a hero, sort of playing this, oh, they're misrepresenting me, and they're calling me a liar when all I did was, look, let's play Dr. White real quick. This is the episode, by the way, that Warren was responding to, that he clipped a couple things out, you know, where made it look like James White was just nothing but outraged and just called, you know, without any sort of basis, was just calling him a liar. Here's what he actually said.
Let's talk about the main thing that was said. Calvinists are just fine with putting their children on the pyre, sacrificing their children in the way that Moloch did, as long as they get into heaven. I've never heard anything more stupid in my life.
And neither have I, right? And that is where the outrage is from everybody on our side. Right. Sure. Since this has happened, people have, you know, little rabbit holes have started and people have actually been arguing the issues. And that's fine. But this all started with what Warren said and his accusation that James White just pointed out and is responding to, that Reformed people are perfectly fine with their children not being elect so long as they are and they get in.
I really haven't. I'll just be honest. There is not a scintilla of honesty in what Warren McGrew said.
And there's where, you know, Warren played that clip, the accusation, and said, well, James White called me a liar when all I did was point out his... No, you didn't just point out a position that many have had since the beginning of time. It's what you said about their mindset with regards to their children.
Hey, as long as I get in, I'm cool with my children not being saved, is one of the dumbest things I've ever... One of the dumbest objections I've ever heard anyone make.
So right away in his response. We have no remorse, no sign of, oh yeah, I screwed up. I shouldn't have gone down that road. I shouldn't have put it onto the person. I should have kept it about the issues. Instead, Warren tries to pretend like he was just about the issues from the start. For real. This is what we have to put up with. I mean, this is the way that Warren operates. Going back to Warren here.
Is actually my criticism of the doctrine. He doesn't like to be challenged and have to give an account, so instead he calls the criticism a lie. It's not a lie, it's a criticism of an actual doctrine you affirm, so give an account of why you believe God throws babies into hell.
This happened. This is for real. It's not a joke. Like this guy actually thinks. Like, and again, he had to look at the video, watch it multiple times to clip out and make his video. Like, how can you, this is just dishonesty right here. That's pure dishonesty. He's not missing it. It's not, oops, I didn't hear all of what Dr. White said. He actually is trying to paint the picture. Again, it's about showing his audience, right, protecting his image as if he's not in the wrong here, that, oh, Dr. White's just outraged because he pointed out the idea that there might be non-elect infants who don't end up in heaven. Now, a little further on in this video, we're going to see proof that Warren does not show any sign of remorse or regret. He's going to have the guy from Gospel Truth demanding that he give a public apology, and listen to Warren's response.
My criticism was regarding the doctrine of infant damnation.
You are both are completely out of line, and you're both disrespectful, and you both owe an apology publicly.
Now, some have pushed back and argued that I was out of line for saying it's the same mindset or the same spirit behind adherents of infant damnation and those ancient worshipers of Molech and Baal who would burn their children alive in sacrifice. They say I'm out of line for drawing this comparison. And to those who've raised this complaint, I do want to apologize.
Now, do you think he's actually going to do that? No, this is sarcasm.
I'm sincerely wrong that I did not use harsher terms to condemn it, like noting it's the spirit of Antichrist and that it's contrary to the God of Scripture. That's okay. I'm allowed to criticize. I'm allowed to challenge. But let's
So, you see that? No apology, zero remorse. And in fact, if he could do it over again, he would have used harsher language, right? And then he goes back into trying to pretend that it was just him criticizing a view, that it wasn't actually an attack on the people who hold that view, which it most certainly was. That's what the outrage is about. And now he's going to go on, and this is the first example of him sort of trying to save face and actually, again, not apologize, but justify his usage or comparison. Okay. What he's going to do is try to point out that, oh, these pagan worshipers, they were sacrificing their children in regretfully, in profound grief, because they loved their children so much. Seriously, listen to this.
Let's consider that comparison for a moment. You have a pagan, and they love their baby, and in profound grief, they toss it into the fire because ultimately they want their God's approval. And if the crops come, well then ultimately the parents are okay with the loss of their beloved child. Similarly.
Right? So, I mean, I don't think anybody has ever considered people sacrificing, burning their children, to get some crops as to be some sort of reluctant, they really love their children, but it's just something they have to do thing. I don't have any kids, but most parents I've heard from and talked to would give their lives for their children, not the other way around, right? They would give their lives for their children, not burn their children so that they can selfishly get what they want to get, right? So in an attempt to save face, he ends up painting these child-burning pagans in like sort of humanizing them. Instead of it being this horrible, unbelievable, brutal thing, it's, well, they just really, they of course they loved their children, and they just really felt that this is something that they had to do. I mean, that wasn't mentioned in the original clip, right? The original clip was, well, if I need to, you know, if I get my crops, right, then I'm cool with that. That's okay, right? And now it's sort of shifted to this reluctant, like, again, just trying to save face. It's amazing.
Ultimately, the parents are okay with the loss of their beloved child. Similarly, adherents of infant damnation love their baby and are in profound grief when they see God toss it into the eternal fires of hell.
Really? You think so? Why wasn't that said the first time, right? That was nowhere present in what you originally said. It was the complete opposite. It was literally,
I may have eternally reprobated my child, but as long as I get into heaven, I'm cool with that.
I don't know about you guys.
Right, that's what was originally said. Not the actual position, which now he's trying to recognize as, and paint as what he originally was addressing, which is that, you know, it might be a hard truth that, that I might come to realize one day that my child is not elect, and it will grieve me greatly to have them, you know, in eternal judgment. If that had been said from the start, there would be zero outrage. Zero outrage. Because that would actually be a respectful way to go about it. You point out that the other side says, yes, because total depravity is true. Everybody's born a sinner. Then if my child's not elect, he might end up under God's wrath. And that grieves me greatly as a parent. Right? If that had been originally put forth, there would be, first of all, number one, accurate representation. And number two, zero reason for outrage. Zero reason for uproar and outrage. Right? And so in his little comeback video here, he's trying to pretend that that's what he meant all along. When I just played it over again.
It's the same mindset where they're like, well, God may have eternally reprobated my child, but as long as I get into heaven, I'm cool with that.
I don't.
And so this is probably the most important point of this, of my doing this episode, is to document and demonstrate that they're trying to shift this comparison, or not shift the comparison. That would have been the best thing to do, like abandon the comparison, shift it to something else, but rather hold on to the comparison and try to adopt it to something else. Right? Into this, well, all I meant was is that you're accepting hard truths, like child sacrificers did back then. They just accepted that it's something they had to do. Right? If that were the case, I couldn't think of a worse example to demonstrate accepting hard truths. Right? I could be just as childish and immature by making that quote-unquote comparison with numerous things from your view. Right? If I were to say, for example, that you have a spirit of child sacrifice because in your view, God allows cancer. And you don't know, let's bring it to children. Child sacrifice, because God allows child cancer. And you don't know which child is going to get it. It might be yours, it might not. But since you believe that some children, God does allow some children to get child cancer, well, you've got you have a spirit of child sacrifice. Because when you look out in the world and you see other children getting cancer, you think to yourself, well, that's cool. It's cool that God allowed that child cancer because at least it wasn't my child. Or to even further bring this into what was actually said and the example actually given would be to say something absurd like, well, if God allows my child to get cancer, that's okay. I'm cool with that because at least I didn't get cancer. That is disgusting, right? Everybody recognizes that as stupid, absurd, and disgusting. And it's offensive to the parent and their mindset that they would have and the love for their child, right? And for me to try to salvage that and say, well, no, all I was talking about was the issue. The issue is that you believe that God allows child cancer, that he could have easily stopped. It's just the issue. Blah, 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 right? Are you going to fall for that? Are you going to fall for that? Or are you going to say, well, you would say, yeah, in my view, God does allow child cancer, but that doesn't mean I have a spirit of child sacrifice, right? If you're going to use some sort of analogy, that is way off the mark, right? And so I say all that to demonstrate that if you're just trying to get across the point that people are accepting hard truths, that was the literal worst possible way you could have done it. And it should have been abandoned rather than salvaged. And that's why we aren't buying it. It's not because we just want to be mad and we just want to be outraged. It's stupid. It's ridiculous. Nobody's buying it. Now, Warren goes through, I'm just, you know, skipping along. Warren goes through and he's basically playing quotes with audio of various Calvinists, you know, historical Calvinists who have said, yeah, you know, there might be non-elect infants that end up under God's wrath. And he's doing it interdispersed with the guy from Gospel of Truth calling him a liar and calling him dishonest. And again, let's hear Warren's response. Again, what is the lie? What is the dishonesty? The projection of the mindset being, I'm cool with that as long as I get in.
Marlon proceeded to claim that I said Calvinists don't care about their children.
That's precisely what you said originally. Precisely what you said, right? Not word for word. You didn't say Calvinists don't care about their children, but you said they say or think that if my child isn't elect, that's okay. I'm cool with that as long as I get in. That's selfish, non-caring mindset.
And he put all sorts of words into my mouth, claiming that...
Oh, you poor victim. Are we misrepresenting you?
I said things I never said. Well, simultaneously calling me a liar, attacking me and claiming this is now personal and calling me to apologize. I mean,
yeah. And he's playing the victim now, for real. After what we've documented here and demonstrated, he's playing the victim.
And he obviously was very emotional about this.
I wonder why.
I don't know if Marlon affirms infant damnation or if he just didn't understand the context or what.
Even if he affirmed that there might be, as we're going to see, we're going to talk about it in a moment, nobody just outright affirms what the Bible is not clear about. Nobody says, yes, 100% for sure, there will be infants in under God's wrath for all eternity. Nobody just comes out. I mean, there might be trolls that do that, right? But that is not a mainstream position. Mainstream position is elect infants will get into heaven, and we don't know how many are elect. It might be some, it might be a lot, it might be most, it might be all, right?
But again, I don't believe all Calvinists affirm that. I think generally most Calvinists do care about their children. I think generally most Calvinists
do care about their children. So again, he just insinuated, not even apparently realizing it, he just insinuated that, well, if you're a Calvinist who believes that all children go to heaven, then you care about your children. But if you're a Calvinist who believes that your child might not be elect, you don't care. Let's play that again.
Again, I don't believe all Calvinists affirm that.
Affirm what? That there might be some children who end up in hell?
I think generally most Calvinists do care about their children. I think generally most Calvinists.
Right. So, again, he just insinuated it. If you're a Calvinist who believes that there might be non-elect, might be non-elect children, that you don't care about your children, right? To recognize a hard truth or potential, right, equals you not caring. So he's literally, after just saying that we're misrepresenting him by saying Calvinists don't care about their children, he's actually now saying, well, my example was to prove that some of them hold this view and therefore don't.
I think generally most Calvinists do care about their children. I think generally most Calvinists try to be good parents. But the doctrine certainly would impact your ability to parent.
The doctrine, the recognition that there might be non-elect infants, and therefore one of your children might not be elect, would negatively impact your ability to parent. Why? We don't know who's elect and who's not, right? So this is like a version of the argument, well, why do you preach the gospel? If the elect are going to be saved and the reprobate aren't, why bother preaching the gospel? It's like, well, because we don't know who's elect. So why would you recognizing that there's a possibility that your child might not be elect, you have no idea whether or not they are, why would a recognition that they might not be negatively impact your ability to parent? Why would that somehow translate into you not caring for your child? Just completely absurd accusations here. So, you know, he goes through, throws in a couple more quotes, and then talks about how he went on Leighton Flowers' show for 3 hours to address these issues and, you know, all these quotes from Calvinists who have affirmed this or that. And it's like, what irritates me and why I wanted to do this episode is that they can pull this goalpost moving away from the attack on the character of the Calvinist onto the position and pretend like they've been trying to simply address the position from the start. That's what irritates me the most. And I think I've done enough to document that fact so far. So it's kind of funny, Drew from Provisional Perspective, if you heard the term hashtag Ballgate, that was made up by Drew and it sort of gained some traction. I think we should start a hashtag never forget. Hashtag never forget what the outrage was originally about.
As long as I am being blessed financially, I'm willing to throw my child on the pyre. It's the same mindset where they're like, well, God may have eternally reprobated my child, but as long as I get into heaven, I'm cool with that.
I don't know about...
All right, so hashtag never forget that. Now, the next thing I want to do is move over to when Warren went on the Provisionist Perspective. And again, look, I have to give credit to Eric here. Eric hits the nail on the head and says, hey, look, this is... I'm pretty sure that this is what the outrage was about. This is why they were offended. And he pinpoints exactly what should be pinpointed. But I want to show how, even in light of that, Warren makes no recognition or acknowledgement that, yeah, I probably shouldn't have gone down that road, or yeah, I could have worded it differently. But a few minutes later in the episode actually circles back and says, well, if I could do it over again, I wouldn't have not gone down that road, as you pointed out. Instead, if I could do it over again, I would have compared it to, you know, the spirit of the Antichrist or something like that. But let's hear Eric real quick.
I think some of the Calvinists were offended when you said the offense comes in, not just with the title, I think that's right too, but when you said, as long as I get my salvation.
Exactly right.
And I think that is where, probably if you had to say it again.
So good for Eric, right? Props.
You might say something like.
So here's the deal. Sorry to keep interrupting this, but you have people from their side, somebody from their side, sitting down with Warren and saying, look, dude, if you could do it over again, maybe you should have said this.
I don't really don't think that people see it that way. Even the infodamnation people, or if I get my salvation, that's fine.
Yeah, literally nobody sees it that way. That's the whole point. That's the whole reason for the outrage. Literally no one says, well, my child might not be elect, but I'm cool with that because at least I'm elect. Literally nobody says that. Now, I've gotten into arguments on Twitter in light of this by continually pointing out that that is the point of contention. That's the point. That's the what sparks the outrage. And I've actually had people say, but you are okay with it. If you accept it as a truth, then you're quote unquote cool with it. It's like, no, accepting something as truth doesn't mean you're quote unquote cool with it. It doesn't mean that it doesn't give you pause or that it's hard to accept or that it might sadden you, right? And even if we did have such thoughts, they would be fleeting thoughts. They would be momentary thoughts. They'd be sinful thoughts, right? We've all had, you know, sinful thoughts such as, wow, that horrible thing happened to that person. I'm glad it wasn't me. We've all had that thought, but we immediately recognize it as, wow, that was a stupid thought. It was a sinful thought. Like, I shouldn't be thinking that, right? You don't use that to then completely try to establish it as someone's mindset regarding a worldview, right? And that's why the absurdity of trying to double down and say, oh, but if you accept it, that your child might not be elect, if you accept that as a truth, then you must be cool with it if you're accepting it. That's like saying, like to the other side, they believe that God allows all the horrible things that are happening that he could easily stop, right? We've gone over that before. That's like saying, well, you believe God allows child cancer, therefore you must be cool with child cancer, right? Or God allows child cancer and you must say, well, that's cool as long as it's not my child. Do you see how you can take a truth of a view, a hard truth? I mean, I would hopefully respectfully at least say, look, I know that you believe God allows child cancer, but you believe he has his reasons for doing so, right? He could at least easily stop it. He chooses to allow it. That doesn't make God evil or bad or morally corrupt in any way because, well, you know, you give your answers, but you think you've got your answers, and we respectfully acknowledge that, right? But for me to try to take that and then start making insinuations about your mindset towards child cancer or any other thing you point out, like murder, oh, God allowed that person to be murdered. Well, I'm cool with that. It wasn't me, right? Like, pure stupidity. And good for Eric for pointing that out, okay?
Or like, since this is how God works, then that's just how it has to be.
And Eric had even said, well, I think this would have made your argument stronger. Eric, respectfully to you, again, I'm giving you props here, but you're sort of launching an attack. And, you know, if you listen to this podcast all the time, what do I hate the most? I hate arguments that are equally applicable to your own position. As I just pointed out, you're launching an attack or an argument that flies in your own face when you stop and think about it, okay? To just say, well, I accept it and this is just how God works, could be said of millions of things regarding your worldview, right? God allowing it all, you accept that God allows murder, right? You accept that God has his reasons for allowing child cancer and child suffering and even creating, here we are talking about sacrificing children. You could go on, move it on to child abuse. He allows the child abuse. He doesn't stop the child abuser. In fact, he creates the child and the child abuser, knowing that that's going to occur, proceeds anyways. And in fact, as I pointed out, upholds the universe by the word of power, even during, he upholds the child and the abuser even while it's occurring, right? So it's not really an argument for me to say, well, you accept that as true and you accept that as how God operates, as if that's some sort of negative to your position. It's not, okay?
Right, like even the pagan would be like, well, since this is the world I live in, since the gods are capricious like this, and you're saying, well, it could be also that you're indoctrinated and the gods aren't actually this way. Or you would say to the Calvinist, it could be that actually God isn't evil and he doesn't damn infants. It could be that. And they're stuck in the propagandized thought pattern of, since God works this way, then infant damnation is just a price I have to pay.
Mm-hmm.
And again, if my position is true, then it's not just this mysterious, this is God works this way. God has chosen to operate under a system of federal headship where we fall in Adam, we're born sinners. And if God does not choose to elect all children dying in the infancy, he has the right to do that. And he has reasons for doing that. Again, I don't know the reasons, just as you don't know the reasons God allows child cancer. But again, it's not just simply, well, I accept it and I'm propagandized and just not using my brain at all and just blindly following God and the way he operates. Like, so on the one hand, I appreciate you pointing out where Warren screwed up and offering, at least offering, maybe you should have said it this way. So good for you for doing that. I just don't think it's a very strong alternative. It would have been a much less offensive alternative, no doubt. In fact, if Warren had said what you said, I don't think any of this would have blown up. We could have responded to what you said, because again, it wouldn't have been quite as personal. It was still a little personal in the sense that, well, I'm just propagandized. I'm not really thinking things through, and I'm just, this is the way it is. I don't have reasons for my beliefs, etc. Whether or not that's what you meant, that's the message conveyed to me. But that's far less offensive than a topic where it's directly relating to a parent and their relationship to their child, that they, whom they love dearly and would give their lives for, rather than sacrifice or throw under the bus and be cool with it as long as they get in, etc. Okay, so I just wanted to play that through on Eric, and from Eric, to give him props for at least trying. Okay.
Then infant damnation is just a price I have to pay.
Mm-hmm.
Since this is the case, not necessarily as long as I get my salvation, right?
But, exactly. So good for you.
But since God works this way, and you're saying like, well, what if God doesn't?
They're already seeing it as being out of their hands anyway, because they played no role in their own salvation. This is something that God.
So I just want to point out, instead of Warren saying, yeah, you're right, dude, that was a much better way of going about it, he's going to acknowledge it as a way to have gone about it and try to take it and run with it, you know, without showing any sign of, yeah, I screwed up.
Elected them from eternity. They play no role in their own child's damnation, apart from him using them as the means potentially to drive them further into reprobation. That's a problem with meticulous determinism. But I could see that. I mean, I think if you come in and you go, you know, this is just how God works. I have to accept it. He's God. Who am I? I'm okay with that. I have to be okay with that. What am I going to do? What's the alternative? You know,
right.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. You know, one of the things too, that's interesting is.
So he thinks that's reasonable, but he doesn't say I should have said that instead. You're right. I screwed up. I shouldn't have made it personal type of thing. Right. So moving on real quick here.
Somebody say something else and maybe it'll come back to me.
Well, I think what's interesting is that this kind of comment from someone where it's like, you know.
So somebody puts a comment, for those of you who aren't looking on YouTube, they put a comment from a chat person. Warren loves all this attention. He absolutely does. Very much so. It's very clear. Even if you go back to just the other video I was reviewing where Warren responds, he says, oh, I've got thick skin. I'm enjoying this. I'm laughing. I didn't play that part, but it's in there. Like, seriously, he loves the attention. So this person says, Warren loves all the attention. A simple apology would have ended this whole thing.
Impugning your motive and demanding an apology. I think that's what this is all about, especially from like Marlon and a lot of this stuff is like.
Yeah, you should apologize for assaulting the character of reformed folks and their mindset towards their children. You should definitely apologize.
You called it a psyop. It's just a way to get you to apologize.
How dare you bring this issue up?
And Warren says, how dare you bring this issue up? Again, like, it's so irritating. And look, I don't even know how long we are into this episode yet because I'm just recording it as I go. But I've established it all, right? You start with the absurd claim. They, even when Eric here points out the actual problem, Warren refuses to apologize, refuses to even acknowledge it, and smugly says, oh, I'm sorry for how dare I bring up this issue. You didn't just bring up an issue, dude. You insulted and assaulted the character of Reformed folks with regards to their mindset towards their children. That's what this has been all about. So hashtag never forget that. Hashtag never forget what the outrage was all about. Right, and unfortunately, after giving props to Eric, listen to this.
How dare you? And like, they tried this on flowers too for a long time, and they haven't really done it for a while because it didn't work. And it's not going to work on you now, where, you know, we distract from what the issue actually is.
What the issue actually is. What was the outrage about? It was about the original comment and the original comparison of a child sacrificing mindset with Reformed parents being totally cool with non-elect children as long as they get in. And now here Eric is saying, well, our demanding your apology and our outrage over that is just us trying to distract away from our horrible, terrible children might be in hell view. And so it's just this weird shifting of now, like, we're the ones distracting? No, you guys are the ones distracting. So to your Leighton Flowers having him on, you guys having him on, you guys are the ones distracting away from what the actual issue was. Warren screwed up big time and should have apologized. And even on your own show, props to Eric, tried to get him to maybe issue an apology, gave him every opportunity to, and he smugly, arrogantly just doubles down. And unfortunately, you guys run with it, right? It's not that this isn't an important issue that you guys can talk about. But don't try to pretend that our outrage over all this is just simply the issue, because it's not. And I'll just add in here, you know, this issue is not something new. It's been around since the beginning of time. You guys could have been talking about it at any point, interacting with people at any point, and in fact, these interactions have taken place. So for you guys to try to pretend that it's just this issue that nobody wanted to touch, and it's been laying dormant, right? Just been laying dormant for all these years, and then almighty Warren McGrew was brave enough to come along and bust it open and start the whole thing. It's like, no, that's not what the uproar was about in the first place. And we're not falling for your goalpost shifting and distractions.
What the issue actually is.
I did issue an apology in my 20-minute video I released yesterday.
And we just played that earlier.
Because I should have used stronger language.
So instead of saying, yeah, I should have said what Eric said, or I shouldn't have said that, I should have said this, if he could have scripted it, he would have also said, meaning let the other stuff stand.
This was off the cusp of my head. You know, I was just flying loose. If I were able to stop and script it, I would have also said that I believe it's of the spirit of Antichrist because it stems from total depravity, which I've argued.
Blah, blah, blah. Right? So he would have actually said, you know, he would have said it's not just a spirit of child sacrifice, it's a spirit of the Antichrist. So I think we've established enough on what's really going on here. And now I think I just want to move on to some of the actual issues surrounding this, because I think it'll also be helpful to cover those. So I'm just going to blast through a couple Twitter interactions here that I think serve a purpose on addressing some of the nuances, the actual, you know, issues that could be discussed here. The first one really quick is, once again, Provision's perspective. He quotes, you know, straight up quotes Warren. God may have eternally reprobated my child, but as long as I get into heaven, I'm cool with that. And sort of, unfortunately, doubles down and says, well, if God's cool with that, why shouldn't you be? Question for Calvinists. And again, I addressed this earlier. It's like you being quote-unquote cool with something insinuates more than just accepting a hard truth, right? I said the assumption that God is quote-unquote cool with everything he determines is laughable. Was God cool with the crucifixion since he predestined it? In your view, does God allowing something mean he's cool with it? Right? This can be easily flipped back on you. It's just not a very good objection at all. I say the fact is we can be not cool with plenty of things that God determines. In fact, you know, this objection comes in all sorts of forms. You know, why are you complaining about what God determined, etc.? It's like, well, part of God's plan and purpose in what he determined could be our fighting against it, our not being happy with it, our being, you know, this, that, and the other. And it's like the same thing holds true for your view where God is allowing things. Does God allowing something mean he's cool with it? Is God cool with child cancer? Is God cool with child abuse? Is God cool with murder? No. Right? And him allowing it doesn't mean he's cool with it. And so for me to just sort of mockingly ask, well, if God's cool with it by allowing it, shouldn't you be? Right? If God allows murder, shouldn't you allow murder? If God allows child abuse, shouldn't you allow child abuse? How dare you try to stop that child abuse from happening? God didn't. Like, it's just stupid. It's bad. I'm sorry, guys. You got to do a little better than this. We now move on to someone who says, basically, he is moving past onto the issues and trying to say, well, look, there's been some Calvinists who say that there will come a day when we're, you know, basically in heaven glorified, where we will praise God for judging sinners, which would include your very own children, And so since you'll, you know, you'll be praising God for that, it's terrible and that sort of thing. So I basically said the alternative, and this is important, the alternative is that you'll be eternally sad and depressed over lost friends and family. This is unbiblical and illogical. You need to stop letting your emotions get in the way of your theology. So Revelation 21:4 literally says, neither, talking about the new heaven and new earth, neither shall there be mourning nor crying nor pain anymore. The former things have passed away. Okay. So even if we say, let's just pretend that all babies go to heaven. And when you get to heaven, all your children will be there, and all the children who, if you, God forbid, if you lost a child or had a miscarriage or something, they're all there. But you can just move this over on to friends and family and other loved ones, right? Are you going to be sad and depressed over them perishing and being judged by God? Or are you going to praise God for executing justice on sinners, which might include your friends and family? If you say no, you're not going to be praising God for that. Like, as a Christian, how could you possibly say that? Well, of course you will be, right? And to try to raise emotions and say, well, if you're going to be praising God for that, that makes you a terrible person. It's like, no, we can be extremely grieved by these things in this life. But when we're glorified and our mind is 100% on God, then we will be praising him for these things, right? So this is, once again, just a really bad objection. This same person, I found it interesting because I quote him. I said, pure emotion has the provisionist reading of Revelation 21:4, which I just quoted. Well, let me read what he said first, because otherwise you won't understand my tweet. He responds to my citation of Revelation 21:4. I said, Revelation 24 explicitly refutes the possibility of you being sad over lost ones, lost loved ones, for eternity. It explicitly refutes it. Second, that doesn't at all mean that our current sorrow is misplaced. One day I will rejoice that God executes judgment on the lost. Will you? His response is, no, it doesn't. Revelation 21:4 doesn't say that. It says we'll be comforted from our sorrows. There needs to be tears in order for God to wipe them away, right? And I said, well, it's talking about the new heaven and earth. It's the transition. It's not saying that you'll still have tears for eternity, but don't worry, God will be there to wipe them away, right? I mean, I've never heard that interpretation of Revelation 21:4, but there you have it, right? Because they actually desperately want to hold on to the fact that you will be sad for eternity over lost loved ones, which I just think is complete. Like, the verse literally says, neither shall there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain anymore. So here's a hard truth that you need to accept, right? Yes, we grieve over lost loved ones in this life, but when you are perfected and glorified, there will be no more mourning, nor crying, nor grief, right? And the recognition of that doesn't make you a terrible person at all. It makes you a good Christian. So next we have a tweet from Soteriology 101, where he says, if your theology requires the damnation of any infant who dies in order to maintain consistency, you have bad theology. First of all, that's an opinion, right? Based on emotion. Well, I don't really like your view, so it's bad theology. But second of all, nothing, I want to say this very clearly, nothing in the Calvinist position requires the damnation of even one infant. Right, we have plenty of room for all infants being saved. Right, I think what Leighton is alluding to here is that since we hold to total depravity, that all men are born sinners, if someone was not elect, then they would perish. Yes, right. But our theology doesn't require that all the infants perish. Our theology has plenty of room for them all being saved. Right, that's an important point. So he says, yes, I'm aware that many mainstream Calvinists believe God graciously saves all who die. I'm thankful for that. But I cannot see that as consistent, considering all those who remain in unbelief as adults in Calvinism do so because of the condition they were born into, total depravity, and thus have no more meaningful control, keyword there, he's been using that a lot lately, meaningful control over their decision than does an infant. Again, meaningful control is just your opinion. You think if you're not in ultimate control, then your control isn't meaningful. We covered that in past episodes. But he says, if you'd argue that God's grace would cover infants due to their inability to believe, why wouldn't you likewise argue God's grace would cover anyone born unable to willingly believe due to factors beyond their control? So this statement, if you'd argue that God's grace would cover infants due to their inability to believe, that's not our position. So I said, there's so many problems here, but primarily the error that we believe infants would be saved by grace in spite of their quote-unquote inability to believe. That's not our position, right? Our position is that the grace of God would regenerate and cause them to believe just like any other adult sinner, right? So God wouldn't be saving infants in a different way than he saves adults, right? It's still gracious regeneration of the heart to cause them to believe. And I actually had some people on Twitter, because of their assumption of libertarian free will and the insistence that, well, you know, age of accountability, some people would even have even said that you're not actually a moral being until you reach the age of accountability, right? Like, not only are, they'll say, not only are babies innocent, they're not even moral beings yet. Like, okay, that's a little weird, but it's a logical conclusion of your view. Something you kind of have to say. But because you assume that, well, they need to wait till that age of accountability where they can make this moral choice in order to accept God, they would actually also say that an infant can't have faith. Like, that's surprising to me. But it's a logical outplay of their worldview. If you don't believe that an infant is a moral being that is making moral decisions in the first place, then I can understand why you would say that that an infant can't even have faith, right? But I believe that an infant can't have faith because it's God who works faith in everybody, whether it's an infant or an adult, right? So that's just another interesting point in all this mess to point out, which reminds me of another interesting question. Some people on Twitter were asking the provisionists, why would, you know, you believe that all infants are saved, but wouldn't God saving an infant be a violation of the infant's libertarian free will, right? If they're not a moral being yet, and they're not capable of moral action, quote unquote, or capable of moral decision, if they're not capable of exercising their libertarian free will yet, then doesn't God need to give them that chance to accept or reject him first? Shouldn't God respect their free will by maybe giving them a second chance in another life or something? It's like, just asking for consistency from their side, because just outright saving every infant who dies is sort of seems like not respecting their free will. Now, this next one from Soteriology 101 is a bit of a mess. He's basically playing a clip where James White's laying out his view. And in fact, this is 15 seconds or so. 25 seconds. Let's just play this.
I've always said God has just as much freedom to be gracious in the matter of those who die in infancy as those who are adults.
And that was after pointing out the two extremes, either no infants are saved or all infants are saved, or you have a middle position, which is what James White just said. God is free to exercise saving grace by electing or not.
Let the judge of all the earth be right. But I'm not going to sit here and pretend that there's a Bible passage that answers all these questions so you can just be dogmatic about it, because there isn't.
Right. And in fact, I had previously tweeted here, Soteriology 101, jumping to another tweet, but it's relevant. James White refutes himself yet again. Notice he defended infant salvation in a debate in 1987, yet now that he affirms non-elect infant damnation, he thinks it's vile that anyone would want to debate it. We don't need to refute White anymore. He's now refuting himself. To which I said, not holding a strict view on a topic that the Bible is not clear about is not being inconsistent, nor is it debating yourself. Also, changing your view is legal in theology. And that's exactly right. So let me play this again.
Dogmatic about it, because there isn't.
Right. The Bible's not clear on the issue, so we don't need to be dogmatic about it, right? We can just mention our acceptance of possibilities. And this stemmed from Warren McGrew challenging Dr. White to debate and defend infant damnation. Like, no, right? Because that's not a dogmatic belief of Dr. White's. So that's where this comes from. Also cover a couple memes here, if you can't see because you're listening. This person posts a picture of a baby elephant. Again, this is sarcastic. You can laugh if you want, but due to their long gestation period, an elephant is born weighing around 250 pounds, making it the biggest baby in the world. Except for James White, when someone dishes it back to him. Hashtag Ballgate. To which I respond, translation, if you respond or push back against accusations that you have a spirit or mindset of child sacrifice, and think that if my child isn't elect, then it's okay, as long as I get in, then you're just weak-willed, thin-skinned baby, right? Because that shows you the mindset of a lot of people in this whole thing. That James White and the guy from Gospel Truth and all our outrage is just us being big babies, and we need to get over it, even though it was a direct assault on our character and mindset regarding children. Then Warren started pumping out, you know, everybody's pumping out memes throughout this whole Ballgate thing. So they post this meme, and Warren Idol Killer, he posts it. This one has, on the top, it has somebody offering their child as a sacrifice, and it says, this saddens me, but I accept it as a necessary truth. And in the bottom, it's babies burning, and you know, apparently burning in hell. And a person with a reformed hat says, "This saddens me, but I accept it as a necessary truth." Again, that is clearly, as I have demonstrated and documented in this episode, not what the issue was originally about. It's not just, well, this is a hard truth I need to accept, right? It was never about that from the start. So I said, you keep forgetting the I'm okay with it as long as I get in part. We still aren't falling for your distractions and attempted face saving. I also say, also, is there a single hard truth in your worldview that quote unquote saddens you, but you accept it as truth? That's a serious question I would have, you know, for somebody like Eric or Drew or Leighton Flowers, anybody who gets a hold of this and wants to respond. What is a hard truth in your view that saddens you, but you accept it as a truth? And, you know, obviously if you do give an answer to that, I actually have offered a criticism of provisionism in the past. I don't think they really have much hard truths because it's all catered to their emotions and what they like. And, you know, I can make an entire episode out of that. It's just an accusation at this point. That's my view of provisionism. But if they were to then give a reason, it would be wrong for me to mock that and make memes out of it, like this one, right? Because that would be an attack on their character rather than just understanding that, yeah, there's hard truths that you accept, right? But this just demonstrates, once again, the sidestep, the goalpost shift that has taken place. And in these people's minds, it allows people to justify getting behind Warren after all of this, right? If they can move it over to just, well, we're just pointing out that you accept a hard truth. That's all this was about. And then make memes out of it. People think that they're justified in their, what I consider to be pretty bad behavior so far. I want to mention a tweet from Dr. White here. It's an important point. And that is, he quotes Salinas Baptist Confession 10.3, "Elect infants dying in infancy are regenerated and saved by Christ through the Spirit, who worketh when, where, and how he pleases, so also are elect persons who are, etc., etc." So he says the biblical citations really don't have much to do with the actual topic of infant salvation, which is because the Bible doesn't address the topic directly. But notice, the confession does not tell us how many infants are elect. So even if I were to say that that elect infants dying in infancy are regenerated, that does not necessitate or imply that I believe that there would be non-elect infants, right? I don't know how many infants are elect or not, okay? So I can just affirm that all elect infants will go to heaven and just leave that to God. Cover the verses from their side. I really want to talk about the verses that they try to use to suggest that all children automatically end up in heaven and demonstrate why, you know, they think the Bible's clear about it and we don't, and why we don't. Okay, and why those verses, I don't believe, actually teach what they think it's teaching. So we'll save that for another time. So I hope this episode, you know, this was an attempt, an objective covering of the issues from my side. If you think I failed, go ahead and reach out to me, mention it, respond to it, do whatever you want. But I felt the need to make this episode to cover these issues, document these things, and I hope it's been helpful for everybody. So again, you can follow the Twitter at the letter C Calvinism, at C Calvinism. You can follow, it's on YouTube, Consistent Calvinism Podcast, on all your favorite apps. You guys have a good one, and remember to stay consistent, my friends.